What's up, family? Jared the Boss Man here. You're tuned into the Boss Man Show on AM 1010, AM 1430, 1055 The King. Check The King out at 105theking.com and The Boss Man Show at bossmanshow.com. Hit me up on Instagram, The Boss Man Show, Twitter at Boss Man Show, and Facebook, Boss Man Show. It's The Boss Man on your radio.
Listen to The Boss Man Show with your host, JR, Saturdays at 9 a.m. right here on AM 1010, The King.
BS3 Network, changing the way you watch TV.
Yes, BS3 Network, changing the way you watch TV, covering content and hot topics from A to Z, sports, music, society and culture, movie reviews, you name it, we have it. Check it out on bs3network.com or check us out on Roku, BS3 TV on Roku, as well as check out your favorite podcast on all podcast platforms or spreaker.com/BS3Network.
You are now tuned to BS3 Network.
So you see him on the screen there. Alabama State Hornets out of sweat. Eddie Robinson's back with me on the Boss Man Show. Eddie, good to see you again, my brother. How have you been?
Man, it's going well. You know, this time of year is a lot of team building, a lot of hard work. I call it like you're digging the fence post. You know, nobody's paying attention, but if you don't dig that post deep enough, that first win, fence gonna blow down in the fall. So we got a lot of unseen work that we're putting in, but the kids are moving at a good pace.
No doubt, man. And in this time of year, man, like you said, conditioning and getting guys kind of in that mode to work hard. And with fall camp coming down the pike after summer two is over, man. So talk about that team building process right there, because, you know, this Porter era, you got to have guys on the same accord. And football is a game where you need every man doing their job.
Yeah, man, it's one of my funnest times of the year. I really like it just from the standpoint of you're competing against each other and you're competing against an unknown opponent. Like, I know we've gotten better from last year, but I don't know how much better other teams have gotten. So you got to have almost that sense of paranoia that whatever I'm doing, it may not be good enough. So I think if you have that type of mindset of every day we have to get a little bit better, and that's what we've been pretty good at, getting the kids to buy into that. Hey, let's go out there and have your very best Tuesday workout. Don't worry about next week or next month. We can't control that in June or July, but we can just keep working at getting a little bit better every day.
And how important is it to get these guys learn how to eat, learn how to sleep, learn how to actually recover, because all that's going to come in handy when you're playing these back-to-back tough opponents in the SWAC.
Yeah, so and we talk about prehab instead of rehab. You know, so you have to get into a routine. Now, the strength is in the routine. That's one of the things that we preach. Get into a good routine. It took me about my third year in the NFL before I had a really good routine of what time I went to bed, what time I woke up, you know, chiropractic, massage, ice. And you do all of those things regardless of how you feel. And that's what you're trying to teach the kids about it, is once you get the routine and it works, it's human nature of saying, hey, well, that routine has been working good. Let me ease off because I'm having success. And the answer is, no, you double down on your routine, and that's why you're having a success. So we preach that all the time, and that goes to school, study habits, life habits, off the field, on the field. If you can get into a good routine, then you have a chance to be successful. So those are the type of things that we're preaching all the time. That's why I'm laughing when you brought that up. That was my message two nights ago.
Eddie, it's funny, man, because, you know, for me, My dad would get up on Saturday morning and we'll go run errands. I think it's the coolest thing ever to go do seven things in like an hour and a half. Go to K-Bar, yep. Go to Lowe's. I mean, that's how I am. So in early in the morning, I go up, do my errands because that's a key. That's how my dad taught me. Like we go up and do errands and then we get back in the house. But that's how I'm wired now as a man that's 40 years old.
Yeah. And so, and my sons are the same way. Like my sleeping in is like 6 a.m., 6:30. That's when I'm going to say, hey, I'm not going to set the alarm clock. I'm going to sleep in. Normally, it's like 5, 4:30, something like that. So, one of my freshmen, like, well, coach, why are we practicing in the morning? Because your coach likes to wake up early. I don't know what answer to get you. So, it's like, and so I just feel like, for me in life, I'm my most productive first thing in the morning. Like, watching the sun come up, yeah, it feels like a blessing, first of all, to have another day and another chance at life. And so I'm appreciative for that. And then just getting everything done, because I learned kind of when I was in the NFL and stuff like that, when you got a lot of free time, hey, I'm going to work out at 3 o'clock. Then what happens at 3 o'clock? Somebody calls you. We need you here. We need you there. And then you miss your workout. So when you wake up first thing in the morning, get that workout at 5:30, it's no other distractions. And so that's what we're trying to get, that fresh brain. I don't want them disturbed by, TikTok or Instagram or phone call and all those type of things. And so you got to get that brain like first thing in the morning, and then they can go on to the rest of their day.
Man, you said a word is I love to go out and do my walkie. This time in Atlanta, it's about 6:30 in the morning. It started, the sun about to come out, and it's not as humid yet. So yep. I get my walk before it gets steamy and humid. So you're right. That's why I'm out here getting my walk around the neighborhood. It's quiet. Nobody's driving around the neighborhood. I can go get my little 1.5 miles in, have feel good about myself, start my day. So I'm with you on that, brother.
Oh, yeah. And then the summertime, kind of like here, the sun comes up so early. It's at 5:30 and the sun is up. And that's like just the beautiful time in the city, because you're kind of beating the rush. It's like you got the half price sale. You up there early. You checking things out before the rest of everybody comes going. And so we do the same thing. Even when I ride my bicycle a lot, I'm up at 5:30 by 8 o'clock. Like I'm back home, so I'm making phone calls. You get on with your day. So we preach that to the kids and they kind of buy into it. And hopefully, like you said, you're still doing it because of what your dad taught you. So we're hoping that we're teaching these guys like life lessons that they can take with them long after football. So that's the biggest part of it.
It's funny you say that, Eddie, because last night, man, kids' neighborhood, we was younger. I showed them kids how to put the knife in the jar and catch like the little fireflies. The grass in the jar. So that's some other thing that my dad taught me. I'm passing on these young kids' neighborhood. Like, these are the lightning bugs. We put grass in it. You put take a knife, put holes in the ragu jar, and they'll live for about a week. Then they're going to die. But you have to light up for you. So it was funny to talk about how what my dad taught me again last night. That's panning for these young men in the neighborhood, because they ain't nobody about the little fireflies. They was amazed by them. And you gave them catch and put them in them jars.
Now, I think just looking at the head coaches in our conference, I think everybody has that same mission. Like, we're really trying to make an impact on young kids' lives, and that's the biggest thing. Yeah, we want to win games and win the championship. That's a big part of it. But the bigger part of it is, the things we're doing with these kids over 4 years is going to prepare them for the next 40 years of their life. And so we can talk about it and we can do it, but kids are watching and they're imitating us. And so they see the way that we're moving as coaches. And so that means we can't be hypocritical coaches. Like I have to really, really be on the standard that I'm setting and the values that I'm teaching. The kids are watching me. Like I have to make sure I'm doing that. Cause they know that I ride my bike every Sunday after the game. So they're like, hey coach, how many miles you got in? So now the days that I'm feeling like not riding, I'm like, nah, I better go. Cause I know somebody gonna ask me and I don't have to lie to them. So as much as we help them, I'm telling you, man, they help me be a better person also. By making me hold myself to the highest standard that I'm setting for everybody else. And that's kind of the beauty of it. Everybody's getting something out of it. So,
and let me ask you this, man, in this transfer portal world, man, is it a little harder to kind of build that bond now when guys are only with you for a year at a time, or they might be trying to use you to get somewhere else to make some more money down the road? So how is it difficult now when you really don't know a guy's motive per se? Like, are they really here to be a Hornet, part of the Hornet program, but they're trying to get here to get to their next stop?
Well, that don't really bother us. I look at it, to be honest with you, the purpose of college is to get a great job. So if you can go to another university and make $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, then I shouldn't be the guy that's preventing you from doing that. And so it's my job to recruit and then develop. So the biggest thing I'm going to do is develop you as a man first and then the football player second. So hopefully the fact that I'm investing in you, you know, like Coach Eddie Robinson said, you got to love them before you coach them. So I'm truly loving each kid and caring about the outcome of him as a person. And I've had some guys that have transferred to other universities and they still call us to, hey, coach, what you think? Or, hey, can you help us get into the Legacy Bowl? Or hey, coach, can I do a pro day with you guys? And so we pick up the phone and respond because we've got a connection. And I think, I mean, that bond is built on the football field. I think when it's a guy that I've been out there and competed with, like at the NFL level, the ones that I'm really good friends with still to this day, it's because we went through something at Pittsburgh when the snow was falling and the bus was running and we had a moment together. Like, hey, we got to get through this together, you know? So, and it's the same thing here. The guys that, you know, we go into Jackson State and I see the adversity and I see how these kids respond and we've had a moment. We got a connection. We got a bond forever, whether you're here or somewhere else. And it's my job to recruit you to the point and make this such a great environment that you don't want to leave. But if the financial situation is some where it just makes economically sense to leave, then at that point, hey, I'm still a big fan. I'm still trying to help you. Like, we still talk with Ja'Cory Merritt. He comes back to Montgomery, and he still works out on the field here. He's still a Hornet. Like, he came out of high school. His only offer was to Alabama State, and he had some great years here, and now he's with the Washington Commanders. And so the fact that he went to another school before he went there, he's still a Hornet, you know, so he still has the right to work out here and be a part of what we're doing, and he's still part of the family.
Yeah, with my good friend Dan Quinn, who's out with the Falcons. Cool dude. Cool dude, man.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And Eddie, let me ask you this, man. With these, talk about this piece. I was talking about this yesterday when I had another interview about being a student athlete, because for me, I'm using my degree right now with my radio show. My degree's in business. So I'm using my degree. How important is to get that degree, because you can apply it. Like, I'm doing it right now. Like, my degree is my show. I know how to. I'm the accountant, marketer, everything, right? I know how to do all that stuff, and I don't pay nobody because I know how to do it. And talk about how making sure your young men get into a major they can use after football.
Yeah, well, I think the big thing is the mentoring aspect, and that's kind of the next step where we're going with the program, just making sure that we have, like, I know some firefighters in Montgomery. Like, hey, man, come back and talk to my kids about what does it mean to be a firefighter? You know, I have another one of my guys, you know, he's into the cybersecurity. Hey, tell him about, hey, you got to get certified to work in cybersecurity. So, I mean, the purpose of college is to get a good job and be successful. So, you know, we have understanding, you go into that senior year, and from a kid who's even myself, like, I was doing everything regimented from 8 years old to 32 years old, football. I knew my schedule. Somebody told me the schedule. And I played 11 years in the NFL, and at 32, when I retired, I was like, all right, what am I going to do next? So I can imagine for a kid that's 22 years old who didn't play in the NFL, and now his whole life has been football. Now you're like, hey, all right, go out there and make it happen. All right, you know, August is coming. You don't have practice. Go figure something out. Well, that's a scary proposition. But if you can do career building and transition, let them do a resume, talk to other people in other fields, let them know, hey, these are the possible options that you can do once you finish playing football. It makes the transition so much easier. In the college degree, I've had some of my students that are, man, coach, I'm just going to play football this year. And I'm like, no, we're going to get this degree. And now, 3 years later, man, coach, I'm so glad that you made me finish that degree that last semester. I'm working at the state and I'm doing this, or I'm coaching and I'm doing that. But if not for that degree, then they wouldn't have had that opportunity. So I think it doesn't guarantee anything that's going to be great or easy, because life is difficult. But it just gives you, it's one more box that you have checked, and it gives you more opportunities in life. And that's what we're trying to make sure that we provide.
No doubt, man. It's so important. Like you said, man, and you're in the city of Montgomery, a lot of history there, a lot of things that are important to our people. So talk about how important it's been to the city of Montgomery to make sure your young men understand where they're at, and the thing that our ancestors did in that city to help us get us where we are today.
Yeah, man, it's a great city. I mean, the Great River region. I mean, we're Montgomery's D1 program, and that's how we market it. They have other D1 programs in the state, but we're Montgomery's D1 program. And so that means that we're trying to cater into everybody here, and we want to give them a great football experience, great just athletic experience. But, you know, Montgomery was the birthplace of the Confederacy and also the birthplace of civil rights. So it's one of those things where you can look at both sides of it. You know, you have the Equal Justice Institute downtown with the Legacy Museum and the Rosa Parks Museum. The home of Dr. Martin Luther King is right up the street. The March from Selma to Montgomery was a lot of students on campus that participated in that march. So we make sure that when the kids come here in August, and we'll do things, we take them to the museum every year so that they can really understand the history and the importance of the people ahead of him that are from the city of Montgomery who've done so much to help America change and to help the world change. And so and a lot of them are still walking around. A lot of them are at our football games. A lot of them are students who are protesting and doing things, and they're willing to share their story. So whenever we can get those folks to come back and talk to the youth, instead of looking in a history book or looking online, you're looking at a person who was out there doing it when he was 18, 19, 20, just like you. And I think that's just something that's very special.
And it's beautiful to still have, you know, my father and my mother, who my mother's 75, my dad's 84. They was around when all this stuff happened. Like, my mother had to get, it was my mother's prom night. Dr. King got killed. Then she had to get a note to go to her prom. Mm. That's how crazy it was. You know, my dad was marching in the movement, but his age, he bumps over these people and tell me firsthand stories about them. So I'm lucky to have firsthand stories from my father, who's also a Black Panther too. So it's like a real Black Panther. You know what I'm saying? So like, I'm blessed to have that right here, two minutes from me. You know, talk about, I'll go ask anytime I want to.
Now you kind of sound like me just from a history aspect. You know, last summer I went to Fred Gray's office in Tuskegee, a civil rights attorney, and just to have a conversation. Like, hey, man, how did you guys organize? Like, were you fearful? Because as a coach, I'm looking at the leadership of where I'm trying to take the team, and I'm just thinking of, you know, if Fred Gray was one of those guys who was standing up to the system back then. And was putting his life on the line, you know. So at the end of the day, I'm not putting my life on the line as a coach. And so, but I'm still leading young men to go in a certain direction. So I think we can learn so much from the way they prepare, from the way the level of commitment to it, and just getting other people on board. Because, you know, everybody wasn't pro, hey, we need to fight for civil rights. Some people was like, hey, man, let's not cause no waves. Let's just, the time is later. So let's push this off a couple years. Why we got to be the ones to put up the fight right now. And so I think you got to appreciate those people that have done that and just sit down and talk with them. Like, you can learn something from everybody. So I took my notes, and that conversation helped me as a coach. It just helps me in my leadership role of trying to make an impact with our young men.
And, you know, at Tennessee State, he did a good job when I was there of meeting the Nashville city and folks, like Reverend Troy Merritt, Diane Nash, and these people who are very, very relevant in Nashville in the movement. So for me, but it was funny, they knew my dad.
Ah, that's pretty cool.
And then they knew, I know who your dad is. You know, it was like, it was like that moment, like, aha, my dad was a part of this. Like, they knew who he was. Like, nice. Yep. You know, so for me, being able to get the firsthand knowledge of all these from these people, man, and who my dad knows and coaching too from his time coaching. So for me, Eddie's like, it's been a blessing that I got all these elders in my ear who care about me because they saw the work my dad put in when it really was butts on the line, you know?
yeah, like literally on the line. So I think that's the part that the kids have to understand, and that's what makes it special.
And I want to ask you just a few questions about the time in the NFL, man, because I had this conversation with Paul Byrd, one of the Braves pitchers, about the turf for baseball and how at the old vet, it really wasn't no cushion when he played for the Phillies. So for you guys playing on at the baseball stadiums, did the dirt affect how y'all call games, whether to be on both sides of the ball because you want to maybe blitz them on the dirt or not so much or run away from the dirt? So how did the dirt play into y'all strategy when that was out there?
Yeah, I think, you know, Three Rivers had it covered up. I know the old Cleveland Stadium had it exposed. Playing in San Diego, they had it exposed. So some teams had the turf, but then it was always a seam around the turf. Those multi-use stadiums, as we can see, they're all gone now. So they were never a really great idea. It was probably a great idea at the time, but now we realize years later, probably wasn't a great idea. And so, and I started off playing in the House of Pain in the Astrodome. So, and that was a multi-use stadium. But yeah, I think it was one of those situations from offensive coordinator wise. You look at Candlestick Park and, you know, the sprint right option. You always saw Jerry Rice, where he was running over the dirt, running here, and boom, fast to the flat. You know what I'm saying? So you got stuck at second base, and he's in the front pylon catching the touchdown. So I think the smart offensive coordinators in football, you're trying to get any advantage you can take, whether it's the positioning of the sun or the wind, whatever it takes. It is so hard to game. Man, you're going to take every advantage that you can to try to win that game. So,
and did you have to change your cleats based on where you were on the field, or you wore the same cleat the whole game?
Now, you wear the same cleat the whole game, but we had, now it's the molded bottom. Back then, you had the screw-in. So, we were in the Cleveland, and it was snowy and muddy, and you had to put your high heels on. So your high heels, when you go to that 1 1/4-inch cleat, and then that thing was sticking out real long. So it's like, and so we had to change the cleats out on the sideline if it got muddy to go with the high heels. And, I mean, you standing up there probably good, but almost 2 inches off the ground, but that's what you had to go to get grip when it was in that type of a bad condition. But it was definitely different between everything being either manicured grass, or the little sports turf that everybody has now. So it was a different era.
No doubt, man. And Eddie, I have some old pictures of you when y'all practiced at Tennessee TSU back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I got open. My mom showed me, say, you should tell him this. It's a picture of you and him together at training camp.
Yeah. No, it was a great experience, man. The love that Tennessee showed the Oilers, and I was I was fortunate because I played the year before the last year in Houston, so I missed the no crowds at the stadium, and then I played in Jacksonville those 2 years. Then when I came back, I missed the Memphis year, but the first year I came back, we were playing at Vanderbilt, then the new stadium in '99. So, but that was a tough transition, just going from here to there. And now they're building a brand new stadium, which I can't wait to see. But they went back to the Columbia blue color. So as an Oiler, like, I'm loving it. Like, I'm loving the connection with Houston. And it's one of those things that you still kind of regret that the team had to leave. But, things happen. But I think the Adams family has just been great with the ownership of Tennessee and Nashville. And who knew that Nashville was going to blow up into the city that it is now, just from a size-wise and everything like that. So it's a great city for an NFL franchise, which it was in doubt, some 20, 30 years ago. But now it was really a great decision.
It's cool for me because I'm Super Bowl going to be in Nashville in 2030 and Atlanta 2028, so I can go to Super Bowls and I worry about hotel fees. I can just go and enjoy. So I can just post
up. Hotel fees are something else. That's a big part of it.
Yeah, no doubt, man. It's crazy how close that La Quinta Inn is to the stadium right there on Interstate Drive. It's like literally right there at the...
Right there. Yeah, it is. And I think that's been there from when I was playing. It was like always there, so...
Yeah. And then going by where the old Shawnee's was right there is this a parking lot. Now, like, I was up there, like, dang, those old Shawnee's right there gone. Like, I used to go to...
Yeah, the city has really grown up. Every time I go back to Nashville, I'm like, wow, man, this is a little bit more and a little bit more. So it's a great place to live, man. Great part of the country.
Yeah, no doubt, man. I'm happy to be able to call Nashville and Atlanta both homes I can go to. Because, Eddie, like, sometimes when I don't want to go to – but sometimes when I don't want to drive 5 hours from Memphis to Atlanta, I go to my house in Nashville and sleep overnight and then come back to Atlanta when I wake up. I'm, like, doing 5.5 hours.
Yeah.
And it gets black dark all the time, after a Grizzly game.
I feel you on that. That's tough.
Yeah, but it is worth it, man. It's better than having a clock in,
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Eddie, man, great to catch up with you, brother. I'm wishing you all the best, man. Glad to talk about your program again. And we'll definitely talk again down the road, my brother. It was always good to chat with you, man. And best of luck to you and your team, brother.
No, well, I appreciate you. Appreciate the coverage, especially, and we always like people that are covering our HBCUs and giving us a spotlight. And so getting more kids to come and participate and be a part of this great history and tradition that's going across the country just with the HBCUs and the SWAC in general.
No doubt, brother. Anytime, man.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
BS3 Network. Changing the way you watch TV.
Yes, BS3 Network, changing the way you watch TV, covering content and hot topics from A to Z, sports, music, society and culture, movie reviews, you name it, we have it. Check it out on BS3Network.com or check us out on Roku, BS3 TV on Roku, as well as check out your favorite podcast on all podcast platforms or Spreaker.com/BS3Network.
You are now tuned to BS3 Network.
What's up, family? Jared the Boss Man here. You're tuned into the Boss Man Show on AM 1010, AM 1430, 1055 The King. Check The King out at 105theking.com and The Boss Man Show at bossmanshow.com. Hit me up on Instagram, The Boss Man Show, Twitter at Boss Man Show, and Facebook, Boss Man Show. It's The Boss Man on your radio.
Listen to The Boss Man Show with your host, JR, Saturdays at 9 a.m. right here on AM 1010, The King.